was a boy, I used to read all about Edison and the Wright brothers, Mr. Ford. They were my heroes. Rags to Riches, that's not just the name of a book. That's what this country was all about. We invented the free enterprise system where anybody, no matter who he was, where he came from, what class he belonged to, if he came up with a better idea about anything, there's no limit to how far he could go. I grew up a generation too late, I guess, because now the way the system works, the loner, the dreamer, the crackpot who comes up with some crazy idea that everybody laughs at, that later turns out to revolutionize the world, he's squashed from above before he even gets his head out of the water, because the bureaucrats, they'd rather kill a new idea than let it rock the boat. If Benjamin Franklin were alive today, he'd be thrown in jail for sailing a kite without a license. It's true. But if big business closes the door on the little guy with a new idea, we're not only closing the door on progress, but we're sabotaging everything that we fought for. Everything that the country stands for. And one day we're going to find ourselves at the bottom of the heap instead of king of the hill, having no idea how we got there, buying our radios and our cars from our former enemies. I don't believe that's going to happen. I can't believe it, because if I ever stop believing in the plain old common horse sense of the American people, there'd be no way I could get out of bed in the morning.
Welcome to Flavor Living Radio. This is Bryant. It's July the 23rd, Thursday, and welcome to our show. Here, we're going to talk about our theme for the show is ice cream. Yes, ice cream. The evolution of ice cream. Invention of ice cream. We have a guest today. They're from Lodi, New York. They are from a small farm there. And he teaches there at Ithaca, New York, at the Social Studies Library. His name is John R. Henderson. So before we get into the show, we have some news we wanted to talk about. I know I want to first say to Scarf and Carf, they are on show 101. Happy anniversary. Yes, 100 shows. You guys completed 100 shows in the UK. They're broadcast on our network, on the Flavor Living Network. And we want to wish them, you know, I have a song for those guys. One second. I got to play this song. One second.
Ha, 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 happy anniversary. Ha, 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 happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Ha, ha, happy anniversary.
Ha, ha, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
I wish to you happy, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. This special day, I'm happy with you. Let's celebrate a happy anniversary.
Ha, 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 happy anniversary.
Happy
anniversary.
I wish to you happy, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
There you have it for Scarf and Carf. In the UK, they have a great food show that comes on weekly and is broadcast on our network. And with Jules and John and just the company and the crew there, they are always given just entertainment from the UK in Kent near London. We are back on The Flavor. And today's, again, is there any other news? Let me see. I heard in New York, the New York Wage Board, they are about to pass the minimum wage, $15 an hour for fast food workers in New York, the state of New York. So I'm hearing some progress. Good progress. So that'll be good for people, you know, to earn more, to make, you know, make a living in New York. And I hope that spreads to many other states. And it has in the West Coast, the East Coast. So New York's in there. New York is there. Back to our show. We are doing ice cream. I'm talking about ice cream you like to have in the park, at a baseball game, concert, Klondike bar, Eskimo bar. The Eskimo pie, I had to get that right, is in Richmond, not too far from here. I'm in Hampton, Virginia, but in Hampton Roads. But in Richmond, we have the Eskimo pie. That has something new with the Klondike bar. Baskin Robbins, Ben and Jerry's, Blue Bunny, Dippin' Dots, Cold Stone, Dumars. That's another ice cream place that's in Norfolk, Virginia, not too far from here. Haagen-Dazs. I mean, there's so many different ice creams that we try and that we eat, and many different flavors, thousands of flavors, pistachio, strawberry, sherbet, Rocky Road. This is what our show is about today. We're going to talk about the how it all started. And I had to basically do some research, you know, some research from and find out, not on a new search engine, I'm giving the hints, new search engine, but I did some research on our search engines here in the U.S. and ran across a person named John R. Henderson. And his family goes back many generations in farming, dairy farming, and in Pennsylvania. They're in New York now, but they know about dairy farming. And before I kind of give too much about the interview, I wanted you guys to hear the interview and listen in and see what you thought about it. We put out for everybody to see the evidence as far as the invention and evolution of ice cream. And here we go.
Okay, welcome to Flavor Living Radio. This is Bryant, your host, and today we want to set the record straight. And if, you know, I just got educated, and I'm hoping you guys will, as you're listening to our show. Today we have an honor to have a guest. Mr. John R. Henderson. He's a librarian, social science librarian, at Ithaca College Library. How are you doing, Mr. Henderson? How are you doing?
Very good.
Yes. Now, people are saying, who is Mr. John R. Henderson? He is the, if I got this correct, he's the grandson of John G. Henderson. And we have to set the record straight on the evolution and invention of ice cream. Correct? Yes?
Right. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, we're setting the record straight today. You know, we have to get this straight and let everybody know who's listening to Flavor Living Radio what's happening here, you know, because this is really phenomenal. This is really history here. So I guess I wanted to show everybody his grandfather, right?
Right.
He basically had the major involvement in the invention of ice cream.
Well, I wouldn't call it major, but I would say it was an interesting footnote.
Yes, yes. Interesting is more than, I mean, if you go through everything, I mean, could you tell us a little bit about, I know he was a dairy farmer. Could you start out with that as far as he was you grew up with a history of dairy farming there in Pennsylvania?
Right. He grew up in Indiana County, which is just to the northeast of Pittsburgh. The Henderson Farm is now still in the same family. 9 generations of Hendersons have owned that farm.
Okay.
My grandfather was born in the 1880s. The farm was well established by then. His mother, who was the daughter of a preacher and whose brother was a lawyer and then a judge,
yes.
They were part of the professional class. And when she fell in love with and married just an ordinary farmer, my great grandfather, Joseph Henry Henderson, decided that he would prove to her family that that farming was just as important and scientific a profession as the law or the church. So he always followed all the latest scientific principles, and in those days, for somebody living in Pennsylvania,
yes.
Penn State College at that point, rather than university, would have been the place to turn.
Now, so he was very competitive, very competitive. To prove, like, hey, you know, as being a lawyer or a preacher is just as important as, because of our food we eat, and just to show that he wanted to be, hey, this, I'm important too.
Right.
In my class of work is just as important.
Indeed. And some of the things that my great-grandfather did was, a lot of the farmers were just subsistence farmers. They didn't make that much more profit than what they could feed a family on and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. But he banded some of the farmers together and built a creamery so they could sell surplus. And he built the first silo in the area, and some of the other people in the area, thought he was getting the cows drunk using this fermented process that occurs in the silo. But he followed those principles, and through his background and because his wife's family was quite interested in education, they made sure that all their children, there were nine of them, mm-hmm. went on to some form of higher education. Most of the girls went on to normal schools so they could become teachers.
Right.
One of my grandfather's brothers went to Westminster College in New Wilmington, PA, and he went on to become a banker. But when it was time for my grandfather, John Gordon Henderson, he was always interested in agriculture, and so he went off to Penn State. His idea was to take the 2-year agricultural course. Now, when I was a kid, I was heard that he and his slightly younger brother traded, so that my grandfather went off for 1 year, and then his brother went off for a year.
To get everybody right. Had their share. I got to college.
But after 2 years, they decided that my grandfather was the better farmer and his brother Harry was the better scholar. So Harry went on and stayed for 4 years, and then got his master's and then a doctorate in dairy science. And he became a professor of dairy science at University of West Virginia and wrote a major textbook on nutrition for dairy cattle.
Now, your grandpa, your grandfather, grandpa, he was good at, I saw when I was researching that, he was good with puzzles.
Yeah, when I was a kid, he would stay with us for Christmas, and he was always giving a lot of Christmas presents of puzzles and that sort of thing, and that's how he knew them. But evidently, from what my father was saying, he could puzzle out other things, but when they would get equipment shipped to them, to the farm, so it'll all be in pieces, and he would have to
put it all together,
like,
right?
Like a and all of that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, because that's really instrumental on ice cream, on learning how to do. Now, when he, as far as Penn State, they had the State College Creamery, and which is still today one of the prominent schools that's been around for hundreds of years. Now, was he one of the first students to attend the State College Creamery in Penn State for the ice cream? Was his class the first student?
I think the short course at Penn State for ice cream making was established sometime in the 1890s.
Right.
But it wasn't taught on a regular basis until sometime after my grandfather was finished. So he would have been one of the very early classes, but certainly not This had been already going on for at least 20 years by the time he was speaking there.
Wow. That's just, now, how can I say it? Now, when I saw when he was at college taking the classes, he must have been also a puzzle person to solve puzzles. You know, when you're in college, the professor says do this and do that. So I saw that he did. He had a job with his roommate in the research lab to study as far as he had the access to lots of milk.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure both he and his roommate, whose last name was also Henderson, but they weren't related.
Okay.
Were probably living very poorly, so they could do what they could to get by. So because they worked for the dairy cows, where they had access to free milk, and they would bring home the milk, swap it for some other things. One story I heard is they made oyster stew because they could trade milk for oysters, and then very hearty meal,
yes.
All for free.
Well, that is very good with oysters. Wow. So, I mean, in having the access to milk, I saw that I didn't know myself. I didn't know. I knew there were different types of cows, you know, but being,
uh-huh.
I never actually got, you know, went to study the different type of cows we have out here. So there are many different types of cows I know because of different colors, and different things. But at that time, it was very important at the State College Creamery to study different effects on different cows.
Right. Yeah. What the Holstein, which is the black and white cow that you see everywhere, and has really taken over the business because dairy really is a business these days, and back then it was much more of a small enterprise, family farm. But the Holstein's greatest contribution to the industry is they produce huge amounts of milk. But back in those days, having a lot of milk wasn't enough. My grandfather used to criticize Holstein milk as blue milk because it was really low in butterfat or milk fat content. So other breeds of cattle are much more important. The Jersey is often used now in small dairy farms because they have a very limited amount of milk that they produce, but they're very high in the milk fat content.
Okay.
At Penn State, what they concentrated on were Guernseys, and Guernseys, which came from the Isle of Guernsey in the English Channel, it was sort of a compromise. It had not quite as much milk as Holstein, and not quite as rich butterfat as a Jersey, but they produced a lot of milk and had sufficient amount of butterfat that it was good for a lot of things, especially for making butter, cheese, and ice cream.
Yes. Well, now, I was reading that your great grandfather, he was also a fan of the Guernsey cow too.
Yeah, again, part of his keeping up with his wife's family was that he was going to do things the best way he could, and so he was able to get a hold of Guernseys. I don't have anything to document it, but my father said they were the first Guernsey cows west of the Allegheny Mountains. and then my grandfather took a step further, and he had registered animals, and so he didn't have just Guernseys, but he had registered Guernseys, and became involved with a cooperative that sold golden Guernsey milk.
Wow. I mean, the taste of the Guernsey milk was just really very good. It must have been very good.
Yeah. It was called golden Guernsey for a couple reasons. One, it had a richer color than the mother milk, but it also was golden in terms of its value. So it was something to be very proud of. Problem with the Guernseys and the other high milk fat content is these days more 1% milk and low fat milk is sold than whole milk, and so they're stripping out all that milk fat, and so that's why the Holsteins were able to take over, because what used to be a good trait is now not such a good trait. But for ice cream, you still need rich milk, but
with buttermilk, you need a high intent buttermilk. Yes.
Right.
Now, I remember as I was looking on, I mean, see, I'm trying to put the case out about ice cream here for everybody to see the case here leading to how ice cream started. And this is the case I'm trying to let everybody to the jury, including me, and I've already decided as far as the case here for ice cream, you know. So I'm just trying to lay the case out here, you know. Now, you were saying that your grandpa, there was a professor that Elizabeth, she had studied as far as, she was a professor for different bacteria and horticulture and just the study of how for milking to packaging for milk.
Right. Yeah, the short course at Penn State,
yes,
for ice cream making is very complicated back then and today. So there are multiple teachers in all kinds of different aspects. So it wasn't just how to combine milk and sell it, but a lot of the chemistry was involved. One of the professors was one of the few women who were in the ranks of professors in agricultural education. Elizabeth B. Meek was her name.
Okay.
The information that I have about my grandfather's experience came secondhand from my father. He found a notebook that my grandpa had, which began when he was at Penn State, and basically was taking notes from classes. And one of the professors that is listed in the notebook, according to my father, was this Elizabeth B. Meek. Yeah, she was the part of the ice cream making that she was involved with was bacteriology of how to keep the milk clean.
Hey, welcome back to Flavor Living Radio. We hope you're enjoying the show with John R. Henderson. He's just talking about, you know, stating one by one about how it all started with ice cream cone. And we hope you're enjoying it. And I just want to say before we go on to part two, because we have more on the show here. I saw this song, and it's for Penn State University. Right here. Here's a song dedicated to Penn State. And we'll be back with part two. All right, back to the show. We're going back to speak to John R. Henderson about ice cream, how it all started, and we got to get back. We got to go back to part two. So let's go back. I just wanted to dedicate that to Penn State University in Pennsylvania, but we got to go back to the story of the evidence of what's going on and what's happening from the past to the future. Here we go.
Prevent contamination during the ice cream making process from the time that the cows are milked, sanitary practices to when it's milk is processed, ice cream is made, and then the ice cream is transferred.
Yeah, because you think about it, ice cream, I mean, it's really cool. I have never thought about the process until so I started researching on how ice cream, and you said it too when you were researching, you said it's all about the melting, it's all about the shape, and keeping the flavor up, the different many flavors of ice cream. So that is like, there's more to that, you know.
Yeah, that's something I never thought much starting when I was a kid.
Yeah.
A lot of technology has occurred in since the age of mechanical refrigeration, in other words, refrigerators, and you got rid of the ice boxes and that sort of thing. One of the biggest challenges with ice cream is how to keep it frozen, but not just frozen, because you don't want it to turn into a block of ice and all crystallized, but you want to keep it that creamy, consistent texture. So you need more than just the simple ingredients of cream and eggs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up, our family had a ice cream maker, the ice cream turner. You put the milk in there, the sugar, and we would churn it. But this is a whole new different thing, because we're talking about ice cream that, you can go into the grocery store, you can go see it at an amusement park or a baseball field. This is to transport it out and then for them to keep it in their freezer,
Right. However, that cranky ice cream is that principle is still what is used. It's done on a larger scale and electrified and all that. But the simple process of that started with a hand crank has been around since I was mid 1800s.
Right. I remember you're stating that. The lady that, I guess the person who invented the ice cream, there was a big warehouse and she had a whole bunch of ice cream makers in there.
There are several people involved with the invention of different technological aspects of ice cream
mm-hmm.
making.
Mm-hmm.
It was a New Jersey resident. And I think for somebody in England at about the same time, either they came up with the idea at the same time or had a different kind of communication than anybody's aware of. But Nancy Johnson was the American who was awarded a patent for the artificial freezer. And it had a hand crank and the agitator inside so that it would blend things together and aerate it so that what we know as modern ice cream was really formed for the first time. There were other kinds of precursors to ice cream. I mean, I've seen claims that the Chinese had ice cream or the ancient Persians had ice cream, but when you look at the details, they were leaving out the major ingredient of cream or milk. So they
right.
had frozen ice or flavored snow, but it wasn't ice cream until a much more modern era.
Yes. This case, the case here we're talking about. This case here. I was back during your grandfather day, every state had different, you said that every state had different regulations as far as
right.
what type of, to have, what type of buttermilk or percentage of
of this content and that content. Is that I know that's true today and was true then, right? I guess the question is, like, how did they determine if they were, when they made the ice cream, on how to make sure you can send it at this date because this was a different content and this date was a different content, you know, the different regulations.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure how they coordinated all that over the years.
But it worked. It did it. They did it, though.
Because I'm in New York State, and we have the Department of Ag and Markets, or agricultural and markets, and when it comes to different agricultural products, there are some strict codes that have to be followed, but when there's the interstate commerce involved, I'm not sure how they do that, other than probably seeing who has the strictest code and make sure that they follow the strictest code if they're going to ship to that state or ship to other states.
Wow. You know, I was looking too that after the now what happened when you're as far as your grandfather after college, what happened?
Well, he took a 2-year course, and a young man, newly married, he got married, I think, just a few months after he graduated.
Mm-hmm.
He went back to the farm. His father, Joseph Henry Henderson, my great grandfather, had he died just about the time. Shortly after, or before, I can't remember the right date, my grandfather finished the program. So he was not the oldest son, but he was able to take over the farm because the older brothers were not interested. One had already gone out to the West Coast, worked in a railroad career, and another was the banker who was getting himself established that way. So he was the next oldest in line, and he took over the family farm. And mostly what they did was just regular delivery of milk. In that part of Pennsylvania, Indiana County, which has coal mines,
right,
and that sort of thing, just a couple miles from the farm was the town of Island. It was a company town. Island got its name because the vice president of a coal company was last name was Island, so he gave his name to the town. But it was a lot of mostly fairly recent immigrants from Italy and other parts of Eastern Europe that were hired when the mines were booming, which they were in the 20s and the 30s, that was an excellent market for a dairy farmer. He could take the milk delivery to Island and make a good profit. But he also supplemented that regular milk delivery with what he learned at Penn State from the ice cream short course, he bought the equipment to make ice cream and was able to sell the ice cream. But instead of selling it to a drug dealer or that sort of thing, what he specialized in was going to special events in the area. So
it's like different fairs and county fairs at the time.
Church socials, mm-hmm. and other kinds of gatherings, and he would make up 5 gallons of ice cream, but it was not large quantity, he would have the ice cream, and then his wife Kate, and I haven't told the story that I was telling was talking about my grandfather and Guernsey cows.
Mm-hmm.
But my grandmother's maiden name was Holstein, although they pronounce it Holston. But I'm sure my father and wife were teased a bit when they Guernsey farmer married a Holstein.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Motivation. That's motivation right there. You know what I mean?
From what I understand, my grandmother did not have a good sense of humor, so she probably didn't suffer that joke very often in her presence. She sent off, I'm not sure if it was some Penn State or somewhere else, but she got a form in which she could make the ice cream cone. I presume they were probably a waffle kind of cone.
Right.
And then curl them up to make the cone. So she was responsible for the cones. And then my grandfather did the ice cream, and together they did a good business. In fact, it was profitable enough that they could have hired help outside the immediate family. There was a son of a cousin named Walter Patterson, and he was a somebody that my father looked up to, and I think in part because when Walter Patterson went out on these excursions to sell ice cream,
okay.
And my father, who was 6 years old at the time, was a real treat for him to go along, and he got to do some quality control testing of the ice cream.
Right, to see what people liked and didn't with the public. Wow. You know, I didn't mention. Yes.
I hadn't thought about it until just now when I was talking about the quality control I was joking about there. But my father went on to become an ice cream taster professionally. during the war, when somebody talks about their war stories, what's your father doing during the war? My answer was, he was a butter taster.
But he was the first one for everybody to have ice cream.
That's right. Ice cream became a very important thing.
Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, it sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, they're talking about a revolution. It sounds like a whisper. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh no. Talking about a revolution, oh, oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, they're talking about a revolution, it sounds. Are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, oh no.
Welcome back to Flavor Living Radio. We have to go back to our third part, talking about the evolution of ice cream. We hope you're enjoying our show, and we're going to talk some more. And let's go back as you kind of the jury decides today about what happened. I mean, this is a great thing that was invented, and John R. Henderson and his family in the dairy farm. You have to be just. Let's go back to part three. Let's go back.
Important thing for morale during World War II.
Right.
And a lot of ice cream was shipped to the war zone, and it had to be inspected. And so there was a school that the Army ran for meat and dairy inspectors, and my father went to that school. As an aside or digression, my father was a school teacher, and if he had been in Pennsylvania in public schools, he would not have been drafted. But he went to Kentucky to be a teacher and headmaster at a mission school in Kentucky with my mother right after they got married, before World War II started. But he got drafted by the Pennsylvania Draft Board because he wasn't a public school teacher in Pennsylvania. But he was 26 years old at the time. Had a college degree and was teaching. And when he went to the camp near Harrisburg to figure out what to do with all these recruits, they weren't sure what to do with them. So everybody else shipped out for basic training. He was there for an extra week, and there was a new group that came in from Philadelphia. And one day, one of these new people who didn't know my father very well asked him if he wanted to go to a picnic that the chaplain was putting on. And he said, sure. Well, it turned out it was the Jewish chaplain, and the Jewish chaplain was had done all the research, and it was basically a career guidance program. Because he found out all the different programs that he could assign people. So my father was there, and there was this program in Fort Lee, Virginia, for this dairy inspection. And my father, who had a background in dairy, heard about it through this chaplain and went there, graduated. There were 20 people in the class. He was sent to New York City, and one other person was sent to Chicago, and while he was in New York, he tested butter, tested ice cream, did the inspections, and before any of those things were shipped overseas.
Wow. Incredible.
Oh, so, yeah.
Wow. The brother, his name was Henry, he went on to write the books. He was the one who published the books for the Penn State Creamery classes to learn how to make ice cream manufacturing, right?
Right. This was my grandfather's brother, Harry.
Yes.
Harry Orham Henderson.
Yes, Harry. Harry.
He was one that was, he became a professor of dairy science at University of West Virginia. And while he was there, one of his professors at Penn State, who had written a book on dairy nutrition, asked Harry if he would be a co-author for a new edition. So Harry wrote the next edition, or co-authored the next edition, and I think wrote two or three more editions before then he turned it over to another author or a pair of authors.
Well, you know, because Ben and Jerry, the famous ice cream, they went to Penn State for the Penn State Creamery.
Right. Yeah. The short course is offered separate these days from Penn State students.
Mm-hmm.
So it got started in the winter time, basically in the winter time because
the farm boys, and I don't think there were girls at the time taking the course, had some spare time, and so they could take the short course. And many years later, Ben and Jerry both went to Penn State specifically to take the short course in ice cream making.
Yeah, and so, I know they had to have looked at some of the books that Harry, you know, that he made design, you know.
Right.
Now, you being the grandson and, you know, and it's 2015, and how do you look at ice cream today? How do you see everybody with ice cream and, you know, in the stores, at the baseball games, at concerts? How do you view ice cream today? Your family has family history with ice cream. So how do you see it today?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of ice cream, but my wife and I have a different approach to ice cream. She's a fan of the high quality ice cream in small quantities. So we have a pint of Ben and Jerry's in a refrigerator. But before she goes to bed, let's have a spoonful of Ben and Jerry's. I like good ice cream.
Yeah.
We get a brand that's advertised as all amazing. We would get some ice cream at Purity, and these days we still make special trips. There's a Cuba Creamery is a place that's just a few miles away from here, Cuba Lake. And it's in the middle of nowhere, but people come from miles around to get that guy's ice cream. And he also took the Penn State course.
All the ice cream companies from 1904 to 1894, everything happened after your grandfather and the students and the professors at Penn State did everything. And then all of a sudden the ice cream companies came out of nowhere, started coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, there were several developments that helped that to happen. One we talked about earlier, refrigeration became efficient for storage and transport. But what they were doing at Penn State when my grandfather was there, and this was not very long after the ice cream cone had first been either invented or discovered, but that's usually credited to the World's Fair in St. Louis in 1904. So less than 10 years later is when my grandfather was at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
And what Penn State researchers were trying to do is to come up with a way to stabilize ice cream so that by the time you got to the bottom of the cone, it wasn't just a melted pool of mess.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a lot of research in testing of different stabilizers and emulsifiers, and trying to create that creaminess that we now know. But the biggest challenge was keeping it from melting too quickly. And some additives would be very successful, but it would change the flavor. it would just be too strong and not give it astringent or a sour taste.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had that notebook or a few more facts, because I'm not sure exactly what the breakthrough was at Penn State, but while they were doing all these testing with different kinds of stabilizers and additives, they tried, they were gelatins,
yeah,
and cornstarch,
yeah,
and seaweed, and all that sort of thing, but at one point in time, this is from what my father says he read when he was in the notebook that my grandfather had kept, was that they were in the research lab, and I don't know which professor it was, but they were working on keeping ice cream from melting too quickly,
mm-hmm,
and he was going over the recent research. And my grandfather wrote down in his notebook was the professor said, "Boys, we have invented the ice cream cone."
Whoa.
I suspect he means that they found the right combination of these additives to make ice cream, a product that you could put in the ice cream cone. And when you had the first lick, it was great. And when you got to the bottom of the cone,
it was good. It stayed there. Right.
Outside, you still have ice cream.
Wow.
Woo!
What history, man. What history with your grandfather and Penn State. I mean, woo! You know, I just want to thank you for being on Flavor Living Radio, for being on our show. I'm still in stunned here. So I just thank you for being on our show. To John R. Henderson from Ithaca, New York, thank you for being on our show, Flavor Living Radio, and explaining everything. And what an honor to be on our show and talking about your grandfather and family and other family, my uncles and everybody involved in the process, and Penn State University involved there in the process of ice cream, even today, with their school today, you know.
Indeed.
Wow. Thank you for being on our show. This is incredible.
Enjoy talking to you.
Yes.
Okay, welcome to our show, Flavor Living Radio. We want to thank everybody for listening in to our show today. We want to thank the Hendersons, the generation of Hendersons, for giving us, being a part of ice cream and the ice cream cone and Penn State University. The creamery, the ice cream creamery, the courses that they are offering for ice cream manufacture. We want to thank them for our Haagen-Dazs and Klondike bars and the ice cream that we pick up at the grocery store for birthdays and holidays and baseball games. Have a great week, rest of the summer, and tune in next week for more here on The Flavor.